Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 49. I'm recording it on Tuesday, November 25th, 2008, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased today offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is The Road Out. I am a big believer in emotional balance. I believe I picked up this piece of advice from Gene Mauch, is my recollection. Gene Mauch was the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies when I was a boy growing up, and either Gene Mauch said it or someone quoted him as saying it. I think it was one of the announcers quoting him. But he argued one time when I was at an impressionable age that the job of a manager is, when your team is doing well, when they're on a winning streak, the goal of the aim of the manager should be to bring them down, to tell them you're not as great as you think you are. You know, don't start thinking you've got this game figured out. Don't start thinking nobody can beat you. To try to bring them down a couple pegs. And then when the team is in a drought, when the team is on a losing streak, you want to be picking them up. You want to be telling them, look, you have a lot of skills that got you here. You belong in the major leagues. It's not an accident. You're great. You're a great pitcher. You're a great hitter. You want to be lifting them up. And I think that's one of the greatest pieces of advice that I've heard, that I think so much of life is just that we go through good streaks and we go through bad streaks, and things are never as bad as they seem when they seem bad, and things are never as good as they seem when they seem good. And if you think about valuation-informed indexing, the approach to investing that I recommend, that's a Gene Mauch investing strategy if I ever saw one. It's all about when everybody's saying stocks are the only investment in class that exists, you want to cut back on stocks a little bit. Things are out of control. And when everyone's saying get out of stocks, no middle class investor should be involved in stocks, that's when you want to be increasing your stock allocation. That's when stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition. So we are now going through a time when everybody's down on the economy, on the stock market, on all these things. And I get tired of doom and gloom. It wears thin. I'm a big believer when we were at those insane valuation levels that applied a year ago, and actually from 1995 all the way through the first half of 2008, I was a big believer in trying to deflate people, trying to bring them down to earth. Stop the silly talk. Stop the dangerous recommendations to ignore valuations. But we're not in that. We're not in that situation today. We're in a situation today where people are down, and I get tired of this doom and gloom stuff, and I think we need to look at something positive. And I received an email this morning from my friend Michael Kitsis. He's a financial planner. If you want to read a lot of correspondence between Michael and I, please go to the website, go to the blog, A Rich Life, and enter the word Kitsis, K-I-T-C-E-S, in the search box there at the top, and you will gain access to lots of emails between Michael and myself, and lots of good material there. And there was an earlier one, I recall, from Michael that got me very psyched, and I talked about it on one of the podcasts. And the one I received this morning was possibly even better, even more of a psych. Psych up, whatever you call it. So I'm going to read that. And then as I thought about it, it seemed to me that there were several Psych-ups. I don't think psych-up is a word. I know what a psych-out is. I don't know what a psych-up is. But maybe I'll make up a word. But there were several positive signs this week. It's only Tuesday, and there were several positive signs. So I'm just going to make brief reference to those as well and maybe give a few thoughts on them as to why I see them as being so positive. But today is a day for looking up. Here's what Michael says in his email. This is Michael Kitsis. He says, "I and indeed, I think some of the planning community is starting to open up to acknowledge more of the flaws of passive investing. In the traditional planner's view, the greatest risk is to be out of the markets and miss the upside potential, an attitude clearly born of a profession that found much of its early growth right in the middle of the 1982 to 1999 era. I and some others are trying to change that dialogue to acknowledge at a basic level that owning a market with incredibly high PE ratios is also a risky thing to do, arguably more risky than being out of the markets. Not that this has to be done all or none, you're in the markets or out, but that at a minimum, we can make adjustments to better manage risk at the margins, and it's constructive to long-term wealth accumulation and preservation. Of course, the irony is that we may find ourselves back in an ultra-low valuation environment where buy and hold really does work pretty well before this is all over. In that case, we'll just have to see if we can learn our lesson better in advance of the end of the next secular bull market." All right. All of those comments are intelligent, wise, balanced, insightful, sensible comments. Some of them, though, just jump out at me. The one, of course, that I love the most is where Michael says, "I think some of the planning community is starting to open up to acknowledge more of the flaws of passive investing." Well, that's the whole ball game. And I won't go into details here. I talk about it on every podcast, but passive investing is the enemy. Passive investing is fantasy land investing, investing where valuations don't matter, where there's no need to change your stock allocation in response to price changes. Passive investing is dangerous investing. We are living today through the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States, and that is due to our too easy acceptance of the passive investing model. We experienced this year the passive investing stock crash of 2008. That's why I am always harping on this question that the experts, the quote-unquote experts, have to say those magic words, "I was wrong." That's what opens up all the good stuff because, and I'm going to, we have the material available to us today to learn how to invest effectively. We know what to do intellectually. We've solved the puzzle, not totally, but to a large extent. And I'll be making reference to one of the solutions in you know, a little later on in this podcast. But intellectually, we've solved the puzzle. It's not a problem. We have work to do. It's not solved in any definitive sense. But we can invest far more effectively than we have for the past 30 years. What we've been told for the past 30 years is dangerous, misguided advice. And we need to get past that. And that's the whole struggle. You know, I have this phrase I use where I say, when we get over that wall, it's a brick wall, it's 10 feet thick. I've never come up against such a challenge in my life as breaking through this wall of resistance to criticism of the passive investing model. But when we break that model down, on the other side, the phrase I always use is I say, that's when the real fireworks, the good kind, begin. I've spent 6.5 years engaged in these stupid word games with people trying to quote-unquote defend the idea that there's no need to change your stock allocation when prices reach insanely dangerous levels. And that question is a dumb question. It's degrading to these people that they even spend time arguing it. There's simply no argument. But when we get on the other side, then there are things that are worth discussing. You know, it's not a question of, does timing work or does timing not work? Of course timing works. All that all the timing is all that market timing is choosing when, determining when stocks offer a better value proposition and putting more money in at those times. So of course it works. How could it not work? How could it not work to put more money in when the value proposition is strong and to not put as much money in when the value proposition is weak? How could that idea not work? Now there are of course ways to time which are unsuccessful. So the debate we should be having and that we should have been having for going back 7 years is how to time effectively. What strategies work? What strategies fail? Instead, we're wasting all this human effort going around and round and around in circles about whether we can discuss whether timing works or not. But if people in the planning community, these are the experts, these are the leaders, if they come out and acknowledge the flaws of passive investing, that brick wall crumbles to the ground and all that good stuff on the other side becomes accessible to anyone, all middle-class investors. Then he points out that in the traditional planner's view, the greatest risk is to be out in the markets and miss the upside potential. Well, that is what they say. And that's just not so. It's the greatest risk when stocks are overvalued is to be in the markets. That's the great risk. Because you not only lose the money, you know, we've seen a 50% drop in prices. You not only lose that 50%, you lose years of compounding on that 50%. Take the money you've lost by being overinvested in stocks and just do a calculation. Do a calculation. You know, go to one of those calculators where they tell people to save and check out how much you'll be losing over 10 years or 20 years or 30 years because you'll lose the compounding on all that money. And it's huge. And I'm not saying that to make you feel bad. I'm not trying to make you feel down in the dumps that you lost the money. But what I'm trying to say is, if we're going to give it effective investing advice, we've got to count that in. We've got to look at the downside of overinvesting in stocks at times of insane valuations. If we can just accept that, then stocks are not nearly as dangerous as people have, as we, most of us think of them as being. Stocks, you know, any asset class has some risk attached to it. But people think of stocks as being this terribly dangerous asset class. And if people can just learn to invest in rational ways, it's largely not true. You can cut the risk of stocks in half overnight just by taking valuations into consideration, just by willing to engage in long-term timing. So, you know, he's basically saying here, I feel Michael Kitsis, who is a financial planner, is saying the question of whether it is risky to be out in the market is now on the table. You see, that's how I interpret these words. He's saying that question is now on the table. It's been taboo to say this. You know, it's one of these things you're not allowed to say. Now he's saying it only to me. He's not saying it on a big stage, but if he says it to me, he knows I'm going to publish this at my blog. Michael's given me permission to publish his emails at the blog. So his name is being attached to a public statement saying, we're rethinking this question of whether the greatest risk is to be out of the markets. And that's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful news. Because once we rethink it, we can come to a reasonable take on it. We can come to understand the realities. Only by discussing things can we ever come to understand the realities. And we haven't been able to do that for 20, 30 years now, ever since the idea took root that passive investing was some kind of science, that you know, we had figured it all out, we knew all the answers, and there was nothing more to be said. And he says, I and some others are trying to change that dialogue. Well, that's what we need. We need people in there trying to change the dialogue. And he says, not that this has to be done all or none. It certainly does not have to be done all or none. Do it all or none, you're probably going to fail. So that's not smart. So we want to do it in a smart way. And then he points out that the irony is we may find ourselves back in an ultra-low valuation environment. Well, that's true. But, you know, what we need today, it's quite true that pointing out the risk of high valuations is not terribly relevant today because we're not at high valuations. But what we need to be doing is teaching people and learning ourselves how to invest effectively and looking at valuations in realistic ways is part of that job. So even though valuations are not a problem today, we need to be learning about valuations because valuations are obviously going to change. They're going to change down and they're going to change up. And we're all, you know, most of us are going to be investing for a good number of years yet. And so we need to learn how it works. But the problem is, as long as valuations stayed high, I love that comment where Michael said, you know, he's sort of giving a reason for how this all happened. He's saying, the financial planning community, it's really only been this big industry for not all that long. And during the formation of this industry, we were in the most out of control bull market in history. So naturally, people adopted all sorts of crazy ideas, and those ideas became conventional wisdom, wisdom that couldn't be questioned. Well, now that we've experienced the passive investing crash, now that we've seen how horrible these ideas work in the real world, we can reevaluate. We're reaching a stage where we can start to rebuild. We can rebuild. Sometimes you have to tear something down in order to build something beautiful. And passive investing has to be torn down. It's not a solution. It's an obstacle. It's sad, and I don't think it was always an obstacle. I think at one time it was probably a great advance. Some of the ideas that people who support passive investing put forward are wonderful ideas. Certainly that's true of John Bogle. John Bogle is both the leading proponent of passive investing, which is a disaster, and the godfather of rational investing, which I think is the solution. That's the solution we should be striving for. So a lot of those, we want to take the good ideas and use the good ideas. We want to leave the bad ideas behind. But we haven't been able to do that because people, when you even raise questions about the bad ideas, for the past 10 or 20 years, people have said, no, you can't question these ideas. And now that's starting to change. That's what I hear in those words. Now, I want to make a few other developments that I became aware of along those same lines. And one is, and just in general, I want to say this. I have a section at my website that I call Today's Passion, and it's just a link. It's a link at the top right-hand corner of the page, and I update it every day and put in a new link. And usually, nowadays, it's on investing, although down the road, it will also be on saving and career growth. But for now, the focus is on investing. And I frequently, you know, I've only started doing this in the past few months. And something I've noticed that I think is somewhat ironic, you often hear me criticizing the owners or the leaders, the quote-unquote leaders, of the Bogleheads.org discussion board. Because they're very, the board itself is wonderful. There are many, many smart investors there who offer, you know, offer their ideas for free, no charge. And, you know, so they're wonderful. They're wonderful people, and you can learn a lot from that board. However, the owners, you know, have banned posting on safe withdrawal rates, honest posting on safe withdrawal rates, and they've banned posting on other valuation questions. They've banned some of the most popular posters in the history of the board because those posters dared to cross them, quote-unquote cross them, by asking questions that they are not able to answer. And all of that I find, you know, just shameful behavior. When you form a discussion board about money, you have responsibilities to the people that read your board, and one of those responsibilities is to shoot straight with people. And you know, you of course need to have, you know, if people are abusive, you need to remove them. And if people are contributing in a helpful way, if anything, you should encourage that, certainly not discourage it. So I've spoken out on that question on several different occasions, numerous occasions really. But I have to say, the Bogleheads.org board, well, I was commenting when I look at what links do I put up at my Today's Passion section. Well, if you count those links, the most popular site that I link to is Bogleheads.org, and it's not close. It's not a close call. Probably 3 times a week out of 5 links that I put up are Bogleheads.org. Part of that is because I love discussion boards. I prefer a discussion where there are 10 people participating to an article where, you know, one guru gives his opinion. But part of it is that the Bogleheads.org board has improved dramatically since the price crash. There still are things that cannot be said. I would not say that the ban on honest posting has been lifted, but I've seen a significant change. And this thread in particular that I'm going to point to, and I'll just quote a little bit from it, not a lot, but this thread in particular, just it sort of astounded me. I actually learned about this thread from Schroeder over at the Goon Central Board, pointed it out to me. And the title of it is, let me see, it's dated November 21st, 2008, and the title is Wealth Track Interview with Jeremy Grantham on November 21, 2008. That's the title of the thread. And, boy, it just amazed me because it used to be, there always have been these sorts of threads. I mean, I participated when the board was the Vanguard Diehards board. And we would get threads on valuations all the time. It's a big issue. And as I say, there are a lot of smart people in the community. There would always be this snide, you know, this group that would come in with these snide comments. Some threads would be shut down by abusive posters. Some threads would just go berserk. But often there would just be these snide comments or sarcastic comments. And basically the message would be, we don't want people posting accurate stuff on valuations. You know, go away. We don't want your business here. You know, hit the road, Jack. And there's a little bit of that in this thread. You know, here's one guy, I'm looking at it right now. He says, one of the things Grantham does that is wonderful, it's actually much along the lines of what John Russell and I do with the stock return predictor. Grantham gives estimates moving forward, long-term estimates of stock performance in different sectors. And we go 10 years out, and he goes only 7 years out. But that's very, very valuable, very, very valuable tool for investors. And so this guy mocks it. Seven, the magic number seven, that tears it for me. Biblical echoes of the seven fat years and the seven lean years. If he'd said 6 years or 8 years, I'd have been ready to believe it. You know, that's gibberish. That's nonsense. He's allowed to post it. It's not abusive. I mean, there's nothing wrong with somebody posting that. But it's an attitude that I have to say is a turnoff. I find that attitude a turnoff. But in the old days, somebody would have posted that comment, and then you'd see 15 more along those lines. You know, anyone trying to post constructively, trying to post intelligently, would have been shouted down. But I don't see that in this thread. There's that post, and there's a couple others of that nature. But they're balanced, more than balanced, by the intelligent comments. By the, you know, here's a guy. Oh, no, 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 not six. Seven's the key number here. Think about it. 7-Eleven, seven doors, seven. Man, that's the number. Seven chipmunks twirling on a branch. You know, these idiotic. Who needs this junk? But, you know, most of the comments on this thread are constructive, intelligent, helpful. This guy's in the middle. This guy is sort of bewildered. He says, Why is Grantham's view on the future course of equity markets taken so seriously here? I'm asking this because I'm familiar with Buffett and Bogle over the years, but not Grantham. Well, you wouldn't learn too much about Grantham hanging around the Bogleheads.org, would you? Or the Vanguard Diehards. But that seems to be changing. They're taking people seriously who take valuation seriously. And so we're hearing some new names. And that is a very positive sign. That's a very, very positive sign. Let me see. There was a comment though that was just wonderful, and that you need to hear. And this was the one that Schroeder was pointing out to me. So I better just going to try to move on down to it. But this guy talks about. Now this guy's talking about Grantham, and I love this too. He says they're saying. Well, he's answering the guy who said, why don't we hear about Grantham? He says, the answer is that when you hear him speak, there is a humility, wisdom, and general demeanor similar to Jack Bogle and Buffett. When one actually sees the man on the screen, it communicates volumes. That is why I suggest it in the other thread that I am interested in what people think who actually saw the show. Thank goodness for Grantham, Bogle, and Buffett. I love and treasure when the old guys speak. I love that comment. Because what this guy is doing, his name is Country Boy, his screen name is Country Boy. What he's putting Buffett and Bogle and Grantham in the same group. And I if I was going to pick three of my all-time favorites, they, you know, those three would be there. You know, Bogle and Buffett and Grantham. You know, throw in Schiller. These are serious. These are the people who teach you how to invest in the real world. And what's happened during this horrible passive investing era, the era when the conventional wisdom may not be questioned, is that these people, you know, the passive investing dogmatists have tried to say Bogle is everything. And you can't listen to Buffett. He's bad because Buffett looks at value. And you can't listen to Grantham because he makes predictions. He makes intelligent predictions of where various investing sectors are headed. You can only listen to Bogle. And Bogle's got a valuable take. Bogle has important information to put forward. But when you listen only to Bogle, you're not getting the full story. So you've got to complement that with Grantham and Buffett and Schiller. And this guy is saying to do that. And nobody tears him down. No one destroys this guy. Nobody smears him. That, you know, it's like the dog that didn't bark. Where is the smear campaign? Where is Mel Lindauer? Where are the goons? Are they sleeping? You know, I'm not trying to pick on them. If they want to sleep, you know, great, great. But what I'm trying to do is applaud them for their restraint. And perhaps some of them are rethinking, reconsidering. And if that's the case, I don't want to slam them at all. If that's the case, I want to hug them, you know, give them a big bear hug and say, hey, man, you know, welcome back to the community of intelligent, rational investors. Because we need those people. Some of the goons are smart people. Some of the goons are friends of mine. In the old days, they're still friends. They're still friends from I still think of them as friends, but they don't think of me as a friend. That's for sure. But anyway, I wanted to go on to... there's a comment. Yeah, this is Country Boy again. Boy, Country Boy's going to have to turn out to be one of my favorites. Somebody said, it would be great if some of these really smart people would, these people who can teach us about investing, if more of them would be seen out in public, you know, show up on TV shows and so forth. And this guy says, there is a very definite reason they do not. Take, for example, the last time Robert Shiller was on Wealth Track. It was fascinating. When he was asked what he would do, he said he would stay in cash, but then said, no, buy American. You had to see the interview to see how scared he was to say what he thought, and that he would be misinterpreted as being un-American. It was so obvious from his behavior and so sad a commentary on the level of public discourse in this country. There is so much fear and anger that fact-based discussions are few and far between. I feel I am back in the 1950s with the House of Un-American Activities. I love that comment. And I put that up as my today's passion for today. I put up the title. I linked to this thread, and I put up the title, House of Un-American, Committee of Un-American, and Committee on Un-American Investing Activities. But, you know, this is what it's all about. What I've had happen over and over and over again when I've posted on discussion boards, there have been thousands of people who have shown an interest in learning the realities of investing. And then there have been, you know, this other group, the goons, that very, 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 very much wanted to shut those discussions down. But a lot of the people in the middle, a lot of the people that have an interest are not sure. They're just unsure. They've heard. And what they say to me is they'll say, Rob, everything you say makes sense. I like hearing what you have to say, but listen, I can't go with what you're saying because that's not what these big name experts are saying, Rob. You're saying something different. And you're not a big name expert, you know, investing advisor. Certainly I'm not. And I can't go with what you're saying. And, I love those people. I love those comments because it makes sense. What they're saying makes sense. They're giving me a reason for rejecting my ideas. And if you have a reason, you're doing the right thing. If it doesn't make sense to you, you shouldn't follow it. If it doesn't hold up, if you've got doubts, you should not follow the rational investing model or the valuation-informed indexing strategy. So I think those people did the right thing. Even if they lost money, they did the right thing because they can turn around. After having lost money, they can turn around and open themselves to new ideas, and you can make that money back. But I think the most important thing in investing is confidence. And you can never get confidence by listening to something and adopting it as your approach without understanding it. So those people had good reason for not feeling confident but about what I was saying. And the reason for their lack of confidence, though, is that what I say does not match what the experts have been saying. And what that guy, Country Boy, was describing is he's telling us why it doesn't match. It's not that these big-name experts aren't aware that valuations affect long-term returns. It's that it's taboo to say that when prices are at insanely dangerous levels. This is what people don't get. People think, oh, the experts, they're just doing the best they can. They're studying investing. They're learning what works, and they're sharing it. No, it doesn't work like that. That might be what they would like to do. My impression is many of them would love to do that. They'd love to share what they know. But look at what happens. Look at what happened to the people who posted honestly on the retire early boards and on the indexing boards. They were smeared every which way to kingdom come. Death threats, personal attacks, intimidation, deception, anything and everything was thrown at them. Well, if you make a living giving stock advice, you don't want everything being thrown at you. So you have to, the reality is you have to shade, you have to spin what you say. You have to sort of talk out of both sides of your mouth. You can't give the full story. Now, I have hopes that that's going to change. I believe there are pressures that's going to cause it to change because middle-class people are investing their retirement money in stocks, and I think we have to get serious. We have to start giving people accurate, realistic, sensible advice that will work in the long term. And the academic research has shown that the efficient market theory doesn't hold up to scrutiny. We've known this for three decades, going back to the 1980s. At least two decades, but another report that I'll be pointing to a little later is a study that points to Robert Shiller's study coming out in 1981 that showed valuations affect long-term returns. So, yeah, that's almost three decades, not quite. Now, this isn't a news flash. What Rob Bennett says, when I say valuations affect long-term returns, that's not something new. I'm a journalist. I'm not an investing expert. I don't do studies. I look things up on the internet. I see these studies and I say, let's go tell people about them. And that's when the trouble begins. Because these are the realities that may not be spoken. Because if what Robert Shiller says is true, and what Cliff Asness says is true, and if what Rob Arnett says is true, and if what Ed Easterling says is true, and if what John Walter Russell says is true, if those things are true, passive investing does not work. And passive investing is the dominant model. So we're in a transition. And that's why what the quote-unquote experts say does not match what Rob Bennett says. But what Michael was telling us, Michael Kitsis, is the planning community is starting to see, wait a minute, we're losing people's confidence. Our advice doesn't work. People see it doesn't work. We've caused great human misery. We might have to start changing. And, the reason I'm optimistic is that my sense of things is, some people will get cynical about this. I remember I read on Amazon.com, I looked up Robert Shiller's Irrational Exuberance, and of course you get comments, reader comments, and a lot of good comments there. And, there was one guy, though, who had a comment, and he said he referred to the investing advice industry, field, whatever you want to call it. And he said something to the effect of this dirty business, this dirty business. And it is a dirty business in many ways. You know, it's salesmanship, of course, and you can't blame people for trying to sell. They have to make money. They have to make a living. But I think sometimes they cross the line. Okay, they say things that should not be said. And so it is a dirty business to a point. But what I have experienced is a lot of people, the people that I look at, the signal I get is they want to change. They want to be more free to tell the realities. All the people that I, you know, check out, I rather than study hundreds of investing advisors, my inclination is to study, you know, half a dozen or a dozen, get to know what they say well. I just throughout life, I've always found that to be a better approach. You're better to know a few things well than to know a lot of things a little bit. And I get that message over and over again. And so I think if we can knock down that brick wall I was talking about, knock down that brick wall, I think you're gonna hear some exciting stuff. And one thing I wanted to you know, here's an example of just what I'm talking about. John Bogle, the man himself, Mr. Passive Investing, right? You hear me complain about passive investing? John Bogle's the king of passive investing. Here's a quote from John Bogle. Quote it at a Bogleheads.org discussion board, and no one attacked this individual. At least that I don't recall anyone attacking him for saying this. Here's what he says. He's quoting John Bogle. I remember John D. Craig used to quote John Bogle. He would quote, you know, I've told you, John Bogle is the godfather of rational investing. John Bogle is where I learned, you know, how investing works, reading John Bogle's book, listening to his, you know, reading his speeches. And John D. Craig used to quote Bogle, and he was banned. He's one of the people that group, you know, the abusive group had banned because he was quoting John Bogle. Can't quote John Bogle on a Bogleheads board, you know. We can't have people talking about what Bogle believes here at a board where we talk about what Bogle believes. No. Because, you see, it's too embarrassing. If you talk about what Bogle says that contradicts passive investing, you know, how do you explain that? So that's the one thing you can't say at that board. Can't talk about what John Bogle says. But anyway, this is a quote from John Bogle, and they left it up. They did not ban this fellow. They did not take it down. Here's what John Bogle says. When everyone assumes, at least implicitly, that the market is an actuarial table, that the past is inevitably prologue, and that common stocks held over an extended period will always produce higher returns than bonds and at lower risk, then stocks inevitably will be priced to reflect that certainty. At that point, however, the certainty becomes that stocks will produce lower future returns and at higher risk at that. The certainty becomes that stocks will produce lower future returns and at higher risk. There's the reality of 1995 through the first half of 2008. We were told stocks for the long run. We were told buy and hold. We were told stay the course. We were told timing doesn't work. And the reality that we produced by believing those things is it became true that stocks would produce lower future returns and at higher risk. That's not Rob Bennett saying that. That's John Bogle. That's Mr. Passive Investing himself. It's an encouraging sign. It's not new that John Bogle says that. John Bogle has been saying that message going back to the mid-1990s when I read his book and when I, you know, first learned how stock investing works, and got on the path that I'm on today, urging not passive investing but rational investing. So John Bogle's been saying that for a long, long, long time. But what's new is that you couldn't talk about John Bogle's beliefs on rational investing at the Bogleheads.org board, and that seems to be changing. Now, it hasn't changed completely, but we seem to be heading in that direction. Now, another positive sign for a podcast that is meant to uplift. Again, I saw this at the Bogleheads board, but it wasn't produced by them. It's something put out by Brad DeLong and Brad DeLong is an economist, and I know he has a very popular blog. I've seen his blog before. And he calls this a note on the growing evidence of aggregate stock market return predictability. And it's dated November 21st, 2008. There's a lot of technical stuff in this report, or I don't know, study, I don't know what to call it exactly. You could find it on the internet if you enter in that title, A Note on the Growing Evidence of Aggregate Stock Market Return Predictability. There's a PDF, and I have the PDF here. And I'm just going to try to hit the highlights if I can, but you know, it's written in this very understated way that academics, you know, report their findings, but the findings are explosive. And there are people who will raise doubts about them, and that's fine. You know, that's healthy. You want to raise caveats. But the fact that what is said in this paper is even a possibility goes totally counter to the passive investing mindset. And we need to have these things coming forward. So here's what Brad DeLong says. A generation ago, it was possible to maintain the position that the way to bet was that movements in the aggregate stock market primarily reflected revisions to rational expectations of future cash flows rather than bubbles or changes in the risk tolerance of the market. Today, it is much less possible to dismiss the evidence that in the stock market, what goes up comes down, and what goes down comes up. Then there's a section, Return Predictability 30 Years Ago. And he says it has been nearly 30 years since economists began writing papers that they documented the evidence that when the price of the aggregate stock market went up or down, relative to the anchor provided by dividends or earnings, I'm skipping a little bit, that high stock prices meant low future real stock returns, and low stock prices meant high future real stock returns. That's valuation-informed indexing. However, back when Robert Shiller in 1981 began writing the first stock, began writing his evidence. I'm trying to avoid the technical language here. When Shiller came out in 81 making this claim, not just a claim, but a claim backed by evidence, people said, here he says, it was possible to argue that these results were, quote, junk science, that a diligent search over different specifications had come up with one in which sampling error had created the illusion of a statistically significant relationship, when in fact no such relationship existed. Well, he says, now, that's no longer true, because now we've been able to study out of sample. Now, I won't go into what that means. If you understand statistical talk, you'll understand. But basically, Shiller was looking backwards and finding a correlation. But once he found the correlation, you know, people studying it could then see if that correlation continued to apply on a going forward basis. And we now have nearly 30 years since the Shiller findings. And what have we found? That yes, it does work. Timing the market works. Long-term timing, not short-term timing. Long-term timing. And now he has one of these charts where he shows stock market return predictability from 1881 through 1959, and it's just it's stunning. You can see the correlation just right before your eyes. So, you know, what he's saying here is I'll just read the conclusion. See if I can read the conclusion, if I can get the PDF down. He says, if the evidence of return predictability presented a generation ago were junk science, the addition of the last 30 years of data to the previous 80-year sample should have led to an erosion of both the statistical and economic significance of long-run return predictability. The key distinguishing feature of junk science is that it does not work out of sample, and that as the sample is extended beyond the one over which the specification search was originally constructed, the statistical significance and substantive importance of the results drop off very quickly. They have not. Shiller's findings have stood the test of time. Shiller's timings have stood the out-of-sample testing. They are not junk science. Long-term timing works. Passive investing doesn't work. Long-term timing beats passive investing. And the wonderful thing is that long-term timing makes sense. The idea that stocks would provide poor long-term returns when valuations are sky high, that makes all the sense in the world. It's passive investing that doesn't make any sense. The idea that it makes sense to stick with the same stock allocation regardless of valuations, huh? That makes no sense. And so the wonderful thing that is happening before our eyes is that we are moving from an era where we're being asked to believe things about investing that make zero sense. And of course, it's hard to have confidence in such an idea. That's why people are panicking today. They put all their retirement money down on a bet that makes no sense, and now that the bet hasn't paid off, they're panicking. Well, should we be surprised? Of course they're panicking. But if we move forward into the rational investing model, if we change the investing advice we've been giving for 30 years, and we allow people again to talk about investing in common sense, realistic, sensible ways, in accord with what the historical data shows has always worked, then we can have confidence in our investing strategies, which means we can stick with them for the long haul. We can become true long-term buy and hold investors, not this phony buy and hold approach that is put forward by the passive investing advocates. So this is very exciting. This is very, very, very exciting. The last item I wanted to bring up is this was another thread from bogleheads.org, and there was a guy over there. And again, I linked to it. I linked to it in my Today's Passion section. And the guy had a thread, and it was just great. What I love about discussion boards is you get away from the experts. I mean, the experts, look, there's a lot of wonderful stuff from experts. I'm not trying to put them down. But I love reading what the average person thinks, because they think out of the box. The experts are sort of, they're all giving this advice, you know, they learn it in a book and then they just repeat it for the rest of their lives. And it just annoys me today when I see comments by, you know, Malkiel and Bogle and even Buffett, and they come out and they say, don't panic, you know, stocks are going to go back. It's true that stocks are going to go back, but I just don't see how you can expect your message not to panic to be persuasive if you don't admit what caused the panic. And they're not willing to do that as of today. And so, I find those comments, I just find them annoying. But even though they're true, they're accurate. You know, the advice is accurate, but the overall environment in which the advice is delivered, I find annoying. But this guy, I don't know the guy's name, his poster at bogleheads.org, he put up a post and he said, look, he said, I like Bogle, I like Bernstein, okay? And I do, I of course do as well. And he says, I like Bogle and I like Bernstein. He says, I believe that they are right. And I want to invest in accord with that. And I don't know, he had some decision he had to make. And on a going forward basis, what am I going to do now that we've had this price crash? And he says, I've read their books, but I'd like to know, have they changed anything fundamental in their recommendations? Have they discovered, he didn't use the word mistakes. I used that, but that's what he was asking. Have Bogle and Bernstein, now that we've gone through this price crash, is there anything that they can now say that they were wrong, that they got wrong? And unfortunately, Bogle and Bernstein have not done that. But I have identified things they've gotten wrong. I have an article at my website called Bogle's Big Mistake. It's at the Heroes and Villains section of the site, and I posted that at the Vanguard Diehards board so that people, people who are bogleheads, people who follow his advice, could see it, and hopefully Bogle could see it. I want Bogle to see it. I want, I'm not trying to hurt Bogle's feelings. This is what I'm accused of. I'm trying to get Bogle to correct his mistakes as quickly as possible. Get it behind him. I'd like Bogle to be the leader, taking us into the rational investing age. Bogle was the leader with passive investing. That didn't work out so hot, but a lot of the ideas he's put forward are wonderful. I'd like Bogle to be the leader in rational investing and evaluation-informed indexing. Bogle, I think it would be fair to say that the passive approach to indexing has not worked so hot in the real world. But there's nothing wrong with indexing. The problem is the passive part of it. Valuation-informed indexing makes all the sense in the world. The people following valuation-informed indexing, they didn't experience a price crash. They're not panicking. They're doing just fine. People who followed valuation-informed indexing had a 20% stock allocation last year. So that, you know, it, with a 50% loss, they lost 10% of their portfolio. That's a loss, but it's a heck of a lot better than somebody who had an 80% stock allocation and lost 40% of their portfolio. So valuation-informed indexing worked, and Bogle is a huge influence on development of the valuation-informed indexing approach. Obviously, it's got indexing in the title, right? Bogle is Mr. Indexing, so I shouldn't even have to say these things. I wish I didn't have to say these things. Anyway, this guy asked, you know, I want to follow Bogle and Bernstein, but have they made any fundamental changes? You know, have they acknowledged any mistakes? And some guy, you know, came to my blog. I think it might have been Drip Guy. I don't know for sure. But he came to my, he had a different name. He went by the name, oh, John Harding. And he says, oh, the title is misleading. You know, you shouldn't be saying, you know, that I had the word mistakes in the title. You know, I said, I forget what it was exactly. Let me see. Bogle and Bernstein asked to acknowledge any mistakes. And he says, oh, no, you can't say the word mistakes around Bogle and Bernstein. No. Terrible. So I want to read just a little bit, if I can, about you know, why I think that objection is silly and negative and unfortunate. And I say, my reaction to your comment is that it illustrates the problem that is at the core of all the, quote, controversy we have seen, right, the analytical errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. There is a feeling in investor world that it is something shocking and terrible for an investing expert to acknowledge having gotten something wrong. I do not see it that way at all. What's the big deal? Bogle and Bernstein have made mistakes. I have detailed a number of them in articles and podcasts posted at the site. Why do some see it as being such a huge big deal for them to acknowledge these errors? Do people think the world is going to explode if their favorite investing expert acknowledges getting something wrong? How the heck are we ever going to advance in our knowledge if we do not acknowledge our mistakes? How are we going to learn more? A policy of never admitting mistakes is the worst policy that can be adopted. Then I say, you know, the title of chapter 10 of the book I am writing is Jack Bogle Started Out as a Little Boy. The point is that Bogle is human, just like all the rest of us. It is my strongly held view that we do the experts in this field no favor when we pretend that they are incapable of making mistakes. Put these people on a pedestal and you create a situation where they feel that they need to pretend to possess a level of confidence in what they say that is not warranted. Acknowledging the obvious reality that these people can make mistakes and have done so lets them off the hook. It helps them in their efforts to help us. I've learned important things from Bogle. I've learned important things from Bernstein. One of the important things I've learned is that both of these individuals are capable of making mistakes. I hope that we will see more of the sorts of comment that we saw from the fellow who started that thread. If I were able to post at bogleheads.com, I would respond to the fellow by listing the mistakes made by Bogle and Bernstein that I know about today. Doing so would help the fellow who started the thread, Bogle, Bernstein, and every community member listening to the discussion. It's a win-win-win-win-win. Do you see? Admitting mistakes is how we learn. If learning by definition means a change, it's a change in what you believe. And the only way new knowledge can come in is by old beliefs going out. If you think you know it all, you've given up the opportunity to learn. And we do not know it all today. We do not know it all today. Here's the last two paragraphs of my comment. I mean no disrespect in suggesting to you that you need to lighten up, John. This is John Harding, you know, Harding, whatever it is. People make mistakes. In all areas of human endeavor other than investing, and in the investing field too, please try to let this in. Please try to come to terms with it. Our hopes of getting through the crisis we are experiencing today depend on it. Let Bogle grow. Let Bernstein grow. Let us all grow. Let us all learn together. Please try to give up on this idea that your favorite investing quote-unquote experts are descended straight from heaven. They are smart and good people, and they are human. We humans make mistakes from time to time. All of us do. Now, I've made that pitch before. That's not the first time I've made that pitch. I think what is different, we're not there yet, but what is different is that I see signs and all these things I'm pointing to that we're getting to the point where some of these people can acknowledge these mistakes. And boy, is our knowledge of how investing works ever going to take off? It's a new era that we will be entering. We had to experience some pain to get there. You know, I think we all wish that it could have been done otherwise. We all wish that we could have had the grace just to, acknowledge the mistakes, learn what we needed to learn without a huge price crash. But that's not always the way it works. Michael Kitsis, I think I may want to circle back to his comments. I think I closed the, may not be able to, I closed the, close the file, but what Michael said is, here he is. I think some of the planning community is starting to open up to acknowledge more of the flaws of passive investing. I hope if you've experienced big financial losses, that's terrible. But I hope you can take in what those words mean, because what those words mean is, and combined with the fact that Boglehead.org is allowing more honest posting today, and combined with the fact that Brad DeLong, has showed in his paper that Shiller's findings from 1981 have stood the test of time, that they've succeeded in out-of-sample testing, that they are not junk science. You mix all these things together, combined with the comment of the poster who pointed out that Robert Shiller has been afraid to state all that he knows about investing because the anger that the passive investing dogmatists feel about what the historical data says has been so intense, so wildly out of control, so irresponsible, so shameful, so degrading. Degrading. It's degrading to the people evidencing it. To let yourself become so angry and out of control is degrading. It's to lower yourself. It's to lower yourself, not to be fully human. I call my book, the book I'm working on, I call it Investing for Humans. I want us to rise to the level of humanity. To use in other fields of human endeavor, we call on our intelligence, we call on our decency, our honesty, our integrity, our kindness, our compassion, our love. It's an act of love to correct someone's mistake. So says Rob Bennett. It is an act of love. I've pointed out John Walter Russell. He's the numbers guy in our partnership. I ain't no numbers guy. I showed my book, the first book, Passion Saving, to John before I published it, and John pointed out an error, a mathematical error. Surprise, surprise. Yeah, that was an act of love. When I point out John Bogle's mistake in the article, that's an act of love. I love John Bogle. And I want that love to, how can I say this? All of the people who have been trying to teach us how investing works in the real world. Robert Shiller, John Walter Russell, Cliff S. Ness, Rob Arnott, Ed Easterling, John Malden. All these people. They are, when they put forward these ideas, they are evidencing their love for us, okay? And we should stop, attacking them and mocking them and ridiculing them and engaging in word games to show that they don't know what they're talking about and that they're engaged in junk science. We should stop this. We should stop this. And not only the people doing it should stop it, the it's a small number that engage in the really, really ruthless, vicious stuff. But the larger number who sit on their hands and do nothing should start to stand up. They should say, wait, we're talking about investing. It's a serious subject. There's no science showing the timing is impossible. There's no science showing that there's no need to change your stock allocation when prices reach insanely dangerous levels. There's no science showing these things. There are people who believed it. There are studies that support these ideas. But these are not definitive scientific conclusions. There's just as much science on the other side, if not more. The science on the other side grows stronger and stronger every day. So we need to look at all of it. We don't want to exclude the people who believe in passive investing from our discussions. They're part of our family. They're part of our community too. They have a right to speak. They have life experiences that the rest of us don't have. They have intellect. They've made many good contributions. So we need to include the entire community. We learn as a community, and I don't mean just the retire early community. I don't mean just the indexing community. I mean the community of investors. And the glue that holds us together is our love for each other as people who we respect and feel affection for, and our love for the subject, our love for learning how to invest, and our love for what we can do with our lives when we achieve financial freedom, which is what we are all striving for when we try to learn to invest effectively. A question came up in the trying to think. I had a. This is the last point I'll make, and I'll wrap this up. But I put out a podcast Monday, and I had a title. It was on Michael Kitsis, and I've done a podcast on this already, and our conversations. And I had some language in the title that the title basically said it, the title. The old title was. My conversations with Michael Kitsis, even the experts just don't get it. And, you know, I sent an email to Michael and I just said, you know, for your information, here's a podcast with your name on it. And there was nothing critical of Michael in any serious way. It was I argue that none of us are experts today because we the community, you know, because of these taboo questions, we cannot have the discussions we need to have to become experts. There's no such thing as an expert when you don't have the passive investors together with the people who understand that valuations affect long-term returns, the rational investors. It's only when that group is working together that a community achieves its potential. So it's my contention that there's no such thing as an expert today. And so I certainly wasn't making a dig at Michael, who I think has made great contributions to our understanding. Quite the contrary. But that, you know, the title was intended to summarize what's in the podcast. And Michael just said, you know, it sounded a little funny, you know, it sounded like I am making a dig, and so I ended up changing it, and now it just says my conversations with Michael Kitsis. But as we were discussing that in these emails, John Walter Russell, you know, I showed it to John Walter Russell, and John said, John agreed with Michael. He says, you know, I think you've gone over the line. It doesn't sound right. And that's how we learn. You see, I am trying to focus on the point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to communicate this point about expertise. I may not see it how Michael would see it. I may not see it how John would see it. I might not see it how a newcomer to my site would see it. It might be the people who are familiar with me, my views on expertise, they would understand right off the bat. He loves Michael Kitsis. He's not criticizing Michael Kitsis. He's making his point about expertise that he always makes. But a newcomer might not understand that. They might draw the wrong conclusion. So we learn together. I have my background. John has his. Michael has his. The newcomer to the site has his or hers. That's how it's done. And that's why Investo World is out of sync. That's how we got on the wrong track. The passive investors got, you know, they had too much success, is a simple way of putting it, in the 1990s, and they got too arrogant and too full of themselves, and they became bullies. And now they claim to have scientific truth on their side. They've shut down the discussions. And so I'll just wrap it up. This is just a few other words from another email from Michael that I also received this morning. We were going back and forth in our conversations, and I won't go through the whole thing, but he's pointing out how investors do get emotional, and he says it's a reality that a large number of people will continue to do harm to themselves in investing as long as they do anything besides being passive and strategic. Because their version of active is counterproductive due to the emotional transactions that take place. And that's certainly true. In other words, many people, if they change their allocations, will change them at the wrong times. But see, my point is what we need to be doing is teaching people how to change. That's the road out of the mess we're in today. What we did with passive investing is we sort of gave up. We said, people are emotional. Let's give up trying to teach them. Just tell them to stick at the same stock allocation. That doesn't work because then people don't know how stock investing works. The only way people can ever have confidence and stick to an intelligent strategy is to understand how investing works. And it sure doesn't work the way the passive investing model says. You know, valuations have a big effect on long-term returns. So it's a teaching. And if we can teach people that timing doesn't work, which is frankly crazy, if we could teach that message by repeating it a million times, we can teach people that timing does work by repeating it a million times. And of course, what we want to say is long-term timing works, not short-term timing. And then he says, somewhere here, I'm going to have to close up, but somewhere here he made a comment about the expertise question. Yeah, here it is. And he says, I like this comment. He said, I've lost it. I don't have it in front of me. But he made a comment where he said about the expertise question, he said he was grateful that I had taken out, that I had changed the podcast title. But then he said, your point about expertise is an interesting point. He says, that would be interesting to debate that. He says, I don't have time right now, but it would be interesting to debate that. Well, see, what I read when I hear those words, what I hear is, we're opening up the discussion. And Michael can only speak for Michael, but I don't think this applies only to Michael. I think there are a lot of financial planners out there that are starting to think maybe we need to open up the discussion. And that's when we see change. That's the magic. We're going to get out of the mess we're in today. Now, it may take 5 years. That I don't know. It might only take 5 months. But I don't know. I'd like to think it would only take 5 months. It's probably more likely going to take 5 years. But there's no reason why we shouldn't try to find the road out now. In this podcast, I'm giving signals to the road out. It's this new kind of thinking, this open kind of thinking. That's the road out. That's how we get outside of all this hyper-rationality, which is rationalizing. It's not rational, it's rationalizing. We need to open up to new ways of thinking. We need to become less defensive. We need to be willing to admit mistakes. We need to be more loving. We need to be more respectful of other opinions. All of that. These are things that we don't often talk about in the investing realm, but we need to, because these are the things that make it work. And unless we bring this human element into the investing realm, we will continue to experience the sorts of financial losses many of us have experienced this year. We will continue to feel pain. We will continue to fall short of our goals. We will continue to feel anxiety over our retirements. But all of that can change. We have it in our power. The road out is accepting that we don't know it all now, and that we need to turn to our fellow community members to learn what we need to know. Good luck with your investing strategies.